The Bloodstream podcast is made possible by Takeda and is intended for informational, educational, and entertainment purposes only. Please consult with professionals before making any healthcare decisions.
When we saw the movie, it inspired me so much that when he said, save one life, and I wanted to save one life.
That voice belongs to a young man named Zachary, who, get this, after seeing Bombardier Blood, asked his parents to forego Christmas gifts, something I've done zero times, in favor of sponsoring a child through Save One Life. That's right. He's better than me. That's the point I'm trying to make. He joins us for the interview later in the program to teach me about generosity. Giving Tuesday took place this week. It's a critical day and really the kickoff to a critical month of fundraising for nonprofits, which this community is certainly full of. Amy and I will discuss in just a little bit, as well as you'll hear us talk about ASH 2020, the annual meeting for the American Society of Hematology, which starts in real time tomorrow on December 5th, running through the 8th. And Bloodstream, my friends, has got a very special and very influential insider working that meeting. Who is it? And what is this person doing at ASH? You'll have to stick around to find out. And in order to encourage you to do just that, please allow me now to say hello. And welcome to the Bloodstream Podcast, a weekly show serving entertainment and information to the inherited blood disorders community. I am your host, Patrick James Lynch, joined as I am every Friday by none other than my colleague and recent Friendsgiving pal, Ms. Amy Board. Hello, Amy. How are you?
Hello. I'm well, and I feel tired today, which is what I felt on Friendsgiving Day. For some reason, I'm pooped.
Okay.
I don't know. I just feel
sleeping okay?
I'm tired today. Yeah, I got lazy last week. Like we slept in. We got our we started staying up later and then we slept in a bunch. And today I ran for the first time in like a week and oh my gosh,
That'll do it. That'll do it.
It'll do it. Yeah. So anyway, I feel like I'm in a fog, so I'm looking forward to this conversation to snap me out of it.
Well, I hope we can do just that. Well, as you know, I got a bonus day of vacation. Yesterday was my birthday. We're recording this on Tuesday. Yesterday being Monday was my birthday, and I got to extend the already long holiday weekend. And I was reminded this morning, there's nothing better than finishing a holiday weekend with a bonus day off so that when you come back, there's just that many more emails and things to catch up on from the time away. So while you are feeling a little bit like sleepy and like you're getting back into the flow, believe you me, I feel the same way, getting back into the flow. So we're going to do it here together. Maybe you all are feeling the same out there. I still also have Thanksgiving leftovers in my fridge. So the overeating and like food coma thing that happens, I'm still on that program, to be honest.
I'm still having pie for breakfast. It's still a thing.
Yep. And now I have birthday cake and cupcakes as well. And I'm going to be honest with you. I'm eating all of it. I'm not even pretending to be disciplined right now. I'm like on a 5,000 calorie a day diet for the time being, I think. So other than my birthday, another thing this week that was worth mentioning is that we had December 1st, which was two things. It was World AIDS Day. And as you Bloodstream listeners likely know, we had a special episode with one of my favorite people, Jeannie Wakinder. If you are not a subscriber, well, let's talk about that. Subscribe to the Bloodstream Podcast wherever you listen. If you are a subscriber, then you probably already heard or have in your feed the episode from Tuesday with Jeannie, a special World AIDS Day episode, also recognizing the 30th anniversary of the Ryan White Care Act. And Jeannie and I spoke a bit about her recently losing her husband, Roy Ginder, which we also talked about here on Bloodstream a few months ago, but people really haven't heard from Jeannie since then. So it was an opportunity to give her a chance to share a little bit about where she's at and let the community know as well. The other thing, though, that December 1st, Tuesday this week, brought about was Giving Tuesday. And we want to talk a little about like what Giving Tuesday is. Amy and I participated in a fun Giving Tuesday thing. And just before we get into that, I want to thank our presenting sponsor. You may have heard of them, Takeda. And they have this website, bleedingdisorders.com. And if you go to bleedingdisorders.com, you're going to learn about, get this, bleeding disorders and the resources that Takeda has made possible for the inherited blood disorders community. Find it at bleedingdisorders.com. And as always, we like to say thank you, Takeda, for sponsoring the Bloodstream Podcast. So, Amy, okay, Giving Tuesday, December 1st this year, let's tap into that nonprofit background of yours, Ms. Board. Can you tell us a little bit about what is Giving Tuesday and why is it important?
Giving Tuesday is a global day of giving. And I love that. I love the idea of that. It is a collective day where nonprofits can basically like have a reason for an ask, like a genuine ask. And it's in December, of course, as we're wrapping down the end of the year. It's meant for, obviously, for donors to obviously give to the organizations that they believe in to get that tax benefit, at least here in the States. And it's just it's a collective day of awareness and humanity, and it's great. A lot of states have their own giving days. Colorado has their own day. It'll be next Tuesday, Colorado Gives Day. So it's a thing that has like popped up all over, and recently the global day is Giving Tuesday, and it's a thing everywhere, and it's fun to see nonprofits go after it. We'll talk about Save One Life. It's fun, but you know, most have a goal on this day. Most, you know, really do campaigns. One of the organizations that we profiled here on the Believe 19, Caught Up, has done a great campaign this year. They've done really good things. So
nice.
It's one of my favorite days of the year. Not to be totally sappy, but I love it. It's a day to honor the work that nonprofits do and to give back. And it's just fun to sit at your computer and kind of go through and be like, these are the organizations that I'm going to give to on this day and to contribute to the work that's being done in our communities.
You know, I was kind of amazed to read, and this comes from a website, neon1.com. I don't know if it's the most credible website in the world, but I've seen these similar statistics in other places. So let's take them at more or less face value here. Nearly one third of annual giving occurs in December. One third. And 12% of giving happens, get this, in the last 3 days of the year. So organizations, just thinking about that as a guy with a company, if we didn't know about the money that we'd have for the following year, at least 12% of it, for the final 3 days, and a third of it the final month, I mean, I would just imagine that would put such pressure and stress on the backs of executive directors and development directors. Did you find that when you were at the chapter in Colorado? You just said it's your favorite day, one of your favorite times a year, but yeah. Did you feel the pressure that these statistics suggest one might?
That's a great question. And because of our funding model here in the bleeding disorder community, we didn't feel a lot of pressure because the majority of our funding comes from the pharmaceutical manufacturers that manufacture our drugs and, you know, really fund our humanitarian efforts in the community. So the day, we always had a big goal, and it was more of a great opportunity for us to tell our story and maybe more people would listen. And that was fun. My pals, like my friends, would have massive goals and things like one third of their budget was made up by end of year giving or these campaigns. And, wow. You know, if you're a nonprofit nerd, if you're a fundraiser, this type of stuff is what you do. It's not just in December. You do it all year round. You have certain campaigns. You have certain things you do. You have events that you put on. This is just a part of the package. And again, it's another opportunity for fundraisers and for nonprofits to kind of showcase what they do and to have an audience that's kind of like right there.
So let's chat a bit about what we participated in for Giving Tuesday this year, which was Save One Life's live stream, all day Tuesday, bunch of different guests that Chris, that's tough. I got to say, I feel for him. He's got like 9 hours in a row of sitting there and doing interviews on a stream. That's a lot. So good job, man. Well done there. But let's chat a little bit about that. What struck you from the time that we spent talking with Chris about Save One Life, their mission, and what they're thinking about on this Giving Tuesday? What did you take away from our experience with him earlier?
Well, I guess, first of all, I think it was a brilliant idea. And to tell you the truth, it was a very innovative, brilliant idea. It was a lot, you know, it's like 9 hours, but the thing that's so cool about Save One Life is, and the guest, you know, like the, you know, his roster of people that he spoke to were so different and everybody had a different connection to the organization, but it was so smart because It relied on Chris's relationships with the people in his community, the people and the guests. He knew everybody personally, and everybody had a personal connection to the organization. Therefore, everyone had a personal story to tell that didn't feel like a plug for money. It was basically just storytelling about why this organization is so great. And if you, you know, if you jumped into anywhere in the conversation, anywhere with any of these guests, you're just going to get little, you know, snippets of relationships with people and why this organization has meant so much to the people that have worked alongside or within the organization. So it was super duper smart. And I'm one of those people that believes that people give to people. I don't necessarily give to a quote unquote mission. I give to the people that are doing the mission. It's kind of a joint thing. Mm-hmm. I want to give to the people that I believe in and the people that tell that story. Because everyone in a nonprofit has a story, and everybody that works in a nonprofit, at some point, whether you're a grunt that, you know, is just, you know, a temp, you know, that's working on letter writing or something, or you're an executive director or you're a fundraiser, everyone at some point has this moment where they're like, oh, this is changing an actual human's life. This is providing one more week of food for a family that will struggle. Oh, this is doing something important.
Yeah. And those stories, too, are what help each organization stand out, especially this time of year when every nonprofit is looking to raise money and looking for your attention and sending you an email and putting things out there. So I think leading with stories, I mean, I'm biased here. I'm right in the middle of my soapbox now. But I think leading with story is what each individual organization can do that's unique to that organization. Tell the story of your beneficiaries, of your donors and their experience. Then you can throw in the messaging about what your call to action is for gives and all that. But lead with stories. And to your point, Save One Life was doing that this week. So I, as a storyteller, was super encouraged by that. And I want to give you a chance, Amy, to speak to one specific thing that we talked about on that before we kind of move on, which is we obviously spoke a little about Bombardier Blood and what that's done. There's a story right there that's helped bring in new people and champions and money to Save One Life. But then we talked a bit about the work that, from a creative standpoint, you led in tandem with Save One Life, filming in India and in the Philippines for some video series that were focused on the patient experience in those countries, not like in Bombardier Blood, Chris's experience, but rather the actual patient and family experiences. I wonder if you could share a little more about what you learned from, say, being in the Philippines and speaking to people there about the scholarship program and how it benefited them as we're sharing stories connected to Giving Tuesday and Save One Life's mission. What did you personally, as an individual, take away from your experience in the Philippines?
I think, you know, I think we feel this in the States as well, that having an education is the first step towards quote unquote independence or finding a purpose or just finding a job. So I think there is like a universal nature to that aspect. But going to India and the Philippines specifically to talk about that scholarship program, and it's a program that isn't spoken about very much in Save One Life's, you know, package of things. We talk about sponsorship a lot, which sponsors a child, which gives monthly funding to a family to survive as they, you know, try to navigate the world of hemophilia and other bleeding disorders. This is an academic scholarship, just like we have in the States, that gives, you know, a portion of money, all of it, something to go to university, to go to a trade school, to actually give these young men and women a chance to have an education. And so you think, you know, that would be universal and everyone would, you know, connect to that. And my biggest takeaway was, I guess, the disparity between the states where we can kind of navigate that on our own, and somewhere like India and the Philippines, where they are born into a family. The majority of the time they have manual labor jobs. They are working mm-hmm. so hard with their bodies, and they are diagnosed with hemophilia and they can't contribute. And so there is a physical kind of distance between that and the, I think what struck me in particular with the Philippines, with the young men that we met in the Philippines, was how devastating that was to their psyche, to their mental and emotional health, and to their sense of belonging. And the darkness that we got from some of these young men about feeling so incredibly worthless because they couldn't contribute to their family's well-being, they couldn't contribute to the greater good, was extreme. It was surprising, and it was it was we weren't expecting it, and it was so authentic. And to have the opportunity to go to school, I mean, the switch on these young men's faces when we started talking about what did it mean to get this scholarship? They can contribute. They're going to school. They figured out something they can do. And that was never an option, never an opportunity without this money, without this small, I mean, from our standpoint, a small amount of money to like give them an opportunity to find a purpose and to give back to their community. It was very moving, and it was surprisingly moving. That sounds ridiculous, but it was really great.
I don't think it sounds ridiculous at all. I think it's one thing to know about something, and it's another thing to experience something and to be with someone in their on their turf, learning their lived experience, looking around, absorbing some of it. You can't replicate that in a book. You can't replicate that with a secondhand story. Content and filmmaking can do a lot to pull you in and emotionally engage, but it doesn't replicate what it means to be there. That said, the content that we created, I think, is worth taking a peek at. Amy's video that she led from the Philippines, it's, I think, what, three and a half minutes, something like that, Amy?
Yeah.
It's a short watch. We'll put a link in the program notes. And to her point, when those young men are talking about what the scholarship program has meant to them, their faces, like, you don't even need to have the audio on. You should, but listen to the audio. But if you just look at it, if you just watch it, you will see what the impact that the program's having. So big shout out to Save One Life for the multi-pronged program approach they have to making patients and families' lives around the world better. We are honored for the small role we are helping play in their messaging and communicating about all of that. And if you are inclined to want to give, please consider Save One Life. If you buy through Amazon, you can choose through smile.amazon.com. Save One Life is a beneficiary for purchases you're already making. And again, there's a lot of nonprofits in this community. There are a lot that will ask you for their attention and support, and all are worthy. Right now, we're talking about Save One Life. So saveonelife.net to see more about what they're up to. A link in the program notes to Amy's video. And with that, Amy, let's move on to our next discussion topic, which is another timely event in our community, less worldly, a little bit more nationally focused, although it's got folks from every, it really is an international conference, but it's called the American Society of Hematology, and it's their annual meeting, ASH 20. This is a big meeting. The reason that it has particular significance is it's the largest meeting in the U.S. of hematologists. So this is a very medical, clinical meeting. So as opposed to, say, the Hemophilia Federation Symposium, which is very community-oriented, NHF's BDC, which is medical and clinical, but also community-oriented, this is really looking at the medical and scientific elements of all forms of hematology, which include things like hemophilia, von Willebrand disease, sickle cell disease, and other conditions relative to our community. What's fun for us is that this year for ASH 20, as I mentioned at the top, we have an insider who is inside, because that's what an insider is, the inner workings of ASH 2020. serving as editor-in-chief of the Ash News Daily, the daily publication that comes out of Ash that somehow has to capture and summarize the highlights from each of these four packed days. And the editor-in-chief of that magazine is a man by the name of Dr. Amar Zaidi. You may know him as one half of the hosting team of the Cheat Codes Sickle Cell podcast, another Bloodstream Media property. And Dr. Zaidi is the editor-in-chief of the Ash News Daily. He will have a significant role to play during Ash, and we are pretty excited to have him as a part of the Bloodstream fold to give us that inside scoop. And I think, and actually maybe Greg can speak to this, producer Greg, son of recent interview guest. I blanked on your dad's name just as I was introducing
you. Kenny Holtzman.
Kenny! Kenny, I should know that. I said that name 15 times yesterday to a three-year-old who wished me happy birthday. but Greg, what have, I know Dr. Zaidi and Dr. Callahan too, the other half of that team, I know they've been really excited about Ash and maybe what they can do in terms of cheat codes and pulling the cheat codes audience into Ash a little bit more. Can you take us inside some of the thinking there and what people might expect out of Dr. Zaidi and cheat codes through Ash?
Well, as you know, and as I think some of the audience knows, Amar, Dr. Zaidi, is one of the leading, if not the leading voice, for advocacy and racial equity when it comes to sickle cell disease and speaking on racism's impact on the disease itself. So I'm sure at ASH, we're going to get a lot of that. Amar will not stop his push for trying to make or push this disease more to the forefront of the medical community and the issues within the disease to the forefront of the doctors working on it.
So it'd be neat to see the impact that that has through the course of this meeting and what comes out from the meeting, what the talking points are, and kind of keeping an eye for where sickle cell might be in the conversation. And one of the ways that you can, if you're listening and want to follow along, whether it's on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram, the hashtag #ASH20, so ASH20 is the quote-unquote official hashtag. So if you're following that across the meeting, those who are posting and using that hashtag, you'll see what they have to say. I would
I
also
have
recommend
a question.
Yes, Amy, any questions? Well, Amy Board, please go ahead with your question.
I do. I have a question. If you're a patient, if you're a mom, you know, listening to the Bloodstream podcast and you have no idea what we're talking about, have no idea what your hematologist is talking about 95% of the time when you're in comprehensive visit, why should you care? Like, for you as a patient, Patrick, why do you care? Why do you follow what comes out of ASH? I mean, I think we've all heard our hematologists say things like in the middle of their presentations about gene therapy, like, well, when this was presented at ASH, so everyone like kind of knows it, but like, why do we care? What if we don't understand the words?
Yeah, well, so that's a great point. And I think that's part of what we here at Bloodstream and generally with Believe Limited try to do is play a little bit of that translator role, because sometimes it really is difficult to just conceptually wrap one's head around what's being discussed, especially if the primary audience in a session are other clinicians, medical people, scientific people sitting in those rooms, which I've also done at the WFH and elsewhere. It's tough. Like I struggle in a lot of those rooms to, with nuance, fully understand what's going on. But the reason I think it's important and the reason I think you can't just accept that difficulty as a reason to go, I don't need to pay attention to it, is, you know, I go back to blood safety and I go back to the known unknowns of medical advancements. I think people in this community who are affected by a lifelong chronic disease should be seeking information from as many credible sources as possible. So for me, that means get information from your HTC and your doctor, get information from your chapter and from the national foundations, get information coming out of clinic meetings, read stuff that gets published in the New England Journal of Medicine, see what somebody in Ireland is saying about non-factory placement therapy, gather as much information as possible because this stuff is challenging. And if we just limit our input to that which we most readily grasp or that which confirms our pre-existing biases or that which just feels more comfortable, we might be missing something. You might be fine, but you might be missing a piece of education that would lead you to make a different decision about your treatment plan or the way you'd want to approach something. It might give you a different perspective on what the future could hold. It might encourage you to participate in a clinical trial, which you hadn't even previously known was a possibility for you. So I think it's important for people to take in as much as they can from as many sources. And what I like about something like following the #20 hashtag, for example, is you can easily just kind of scroll through and see what you find, like what jumps up, what you find interesting. I always kind of take a look at, you know, who is posting and then how much interaction are some of these posts getting from other medical Twitter people or medical Facebookers. You know, there are a lot of social media clinicians and medical people now. There weren't a few years ago, but there's a whole movement of these experts using social media. So I feel like we kind of get to tap into that sneakily by like using the hashtag or following the accounts of hematologists who are primarily speaking to other hematologists.
That's a great point, because you're right. It is kind of a new thing that like some of our hematology, you know, thought leaders per se are now on social media like Twitter, and they're speaking like normal people language on Twitter. So they'll like post, you know, like they'll post a journal entry or they'll post some paper or something, but then they'll like talk like a normal person. They'll like write a normal person caption. So who are your favorite follows? Like who are you starting to learn and gather information from on Twitter? Since we're both Twitter nerds, join us everyone on Twitter.
Come aboard. Let's see
Patrick
what we're up to.
Patrick and I are super fun on Twitter, so maybe you should join us.
Yeah, really. Why would you want to miss out on fun? It's free, too.
It's free. Twitter's
Professor
free.
Professor Mike Makris, professor of hematology. I've been following him for years. I think he's been a real leader in Twitter and hematology. So, and he also has a fun... He does a good job, to your point, Amy, of letting his voice come through as well as his expertise. Like there's certainly times where I'm like, too many acronyms, too many decimal points. I don't know what that is, but he is generally pretty good too about like giving you his like human commentary or, you know, context for something, which I can tap into. So I'm a big fan of his. You know, I mentioned Ireland a little while ago, Brian O'Mahony, the executive director, leader guy of the Irish Hemophilia Society, former WFH president, extraordinarily credible patient and patient advocate. I find, you know, he does so much. I find his ability to articulate very specifically to be impressive. So when I've been in plenty of meetings with him where there's been a specific or nuanced question that's been posed, and Brian has clearly thought about this before, spoken about it, done his homework. So I appreciate hearing from him. And then hearing from somebody who's non-US, which is true of Professor Makris as well, I think it helps put a different, just a slightly different lens on stuff. So I like that about Brian. I like that too about my buddy Luke Pembroke, who's a patient who's in a clinical trial and has been vlogging and blogging about that. So really letting us in. And again, non-US, so it's a different perspective. And then I guess they have one other person who I'll mention too for kind of a different reason. Dr. Guy Young out of CHLA, not too far from where Amy and I are. He got on Twitter, like I remember some of his first posts. It wasn't that long ago, maybe in the last year or two, I don't know. But what I like about him is like he tries to just post about like normal stuff. He's like, here I am at the beach. You know, here's a funny thing that happened over here. And I just appreciate that because I don't see a lot of people doing that. They might be using their normal voice, but they're still talking about hematology. But Dr. Young does some hematology and then he's like, this is cool. Look over here. And I like that. I think that's part of like getting to know someone's full self through social media. I find that enjoyable.
Too.
So Dr. Guy Young, shout out for your personality on
100%. And he also like full blown gives you opinions. And he says so. He's like, this is my opinion. But like this thing that's happening.
Sometimes.
Yes. Anyway, he's a great follow. He's very dicey. It's great.
Who's on your list?
My biggest Twitter follow, and I'm hoping to get her on our new podcast for women with bleeding disorders. She's called the Shematologist. Obviously, that is not her name. Her name is Dr. Angela Wyant. She's a hematologist that specializes in women with bleeding disorders from the University of Michigan. And she's great. She is like Dr. Zaidi in the fact that she's an advocate as well as a hematologist, and she has a great voice for women and a great voice for the hematology world. And she's also, I think she's the most followed of the hematology people. Like she's definitely made a name for herself on Twitter.
For sure.
And she's great. And she also, she partners a lot with Dr. Paula James, who's not on Twitter, actually, but her organization that she founded, Let's Talk Period. Dr. Paula James is a hematologist in, Ontario, and that might be a lie. It's in Canada.
It's definitely in Canada.
Wonderful. We had an interview with her last week that'll come out in March on our new podcast for women with bleeding disorders. And she is, oh my gosh, protect her at all costs. She is a gem. Mm. And they work together. But she has an organization called Let's Talk Period, and they're on Instagram. So search for that. That's a great nerdy bleeding disorder thing. So I'm bringing the ladies to this conversation. I'm bringing the ladies.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Someone had to. So thank you for bringing the ladies into the fold. So there's some ideas of folks you can follow on Twitter. A number of them are also on Instagram, although I think I prefer, for the purposes of learning medical information from people, I like Twitter. It's written words. It's abbreviated. And that makes a lot of sense. So
yes,
most of these folks are on Twitter. To Amy's point, Let's Talk Periods on Instagram. So for those for whom that would be of interest, do check that out. And Ash20, follow the hashtag and reach out to Dr. Zadie, Dr. Z Sickle Cell on Twitter. And then there's Dr. Mike Callahan as well, his partner. He's on as well. Himagineer is his Twitter handle. Got to give that a shout out too. I don't want Dr. Mike getting upset because we gave too much love to Dr. Zadie. So Dr. Mike is the Himagineer on Twitter. So, all right, let's go from hematologists and experts and adults with birthdays to young people who are changing the world. This interview with Zachary, again, mentioned it at the top. After watching Bombardier Blood, again, important that we tell stories so that we engage people. Zachary was engaged. He thought, this is important. I am going to, mom, dad, don't want Christmas presents this year. I want instead to sponsor a child through Save One Life. What an awesome moment in his life. I don't know if he knows that yet, but what an awesome moment in his life. What a cool inspiration he can be for other kids his age. What a difference he's making by just making that decision and communicating it to his parents at such a young age. So let's hear directly from him. This is my and Amy's conversation with our new friend, Zachary. All right, so Amy and I are now joined by a young and inspiring member of our community alongside his mother. We are joined by Zachary and Autumn. Zachary, good morning. How are you? Good morning for me. I guess it's good afternoon for you, isn't it?
I'm good.
Where are we reaching you today, Zach? Where do you live?
Norwalk, Maine.
You know, Zach, you came on our radar when we saw this incredible post from Save One Life just, I guess, a couple of weeks ago now about a decision that you had made and communicated with your family. I wonder if you could tell us the story of what it is that you asked your family and why.
Are you going to be shy now?
That's okay.
You want me to start it? So I had been wanting for Christmas, I wanted to get Zachary. We had met Chris Bombardier on World Hemophilia Day last year when he came to Maine, and we watched Bombardier Blood. We got to watch the premiere of that with him. And Zachary was inspired. You know, he's had needle phobias, and, you know, it was just eye-opening for him to see different realms of the world. So I'd reach out to Chris because I was trying to get a hat for Zachary, and I couldn't get off the site, so I messaged Chris, and so he sent me one. I said, okay, so let me know how much you want for it. He's like, no, I don't want anything for it. He's like, you know, if you want, he's like, donate to, you know, Save One Life. And I was like, well, funny you say that, because we were talking about Christmas and Santa, and Zachary had said, what did you say?
I didn't want one because it's all about family and friends.
Yeah, he didn't want presents this year because it's about family and friends. And so we talked about finding somebody to sponsor through Save One Life.
Wow. Zachary, that's so neat. What? Tell me more about what made you want to do this. Where did you get this idea?
Well, when we saw the movie, it inspired me so much that when he said, save one life, and I wanted to save one life.
That's amazing, man. That's really amazing. I'm curious to know what else about the movie stuck out to you. I don't know if you know, but Amy and I, we had something to do with making that movie. So what else stood out to you? We'd love to hear it.
Yeah, what did you feel when you watched the movie?
I feel like I had a full support team.
That's great. And what was it like watching Chris Bombardier up on the big screen? What was that like to see him in his story?
I felt good seeing him and meeting him.
So Zachary and Autumn too, I suppose, have you chosen the child that you want to sponsor through Save One Life?
We did. Yep.
Okay.
We sat down as a family and chose who we were going to pick.
So Amy and I have been through this process before, so I'll ask the question, how did you choose who you wanted to sponsor?
Well, most of us wanted to sponsor the other boy because his dad didn't get this much money for his job. But he had a full support team, a full story house, and the other boy that we sponsored only had one room house.
And he just lived with his dad.
Mm-hmm. And he just lived with his dad, and he didn't have a full support team.
So you thought he could really use the help, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's really neat. Do you know his name?
Saran.
And where does he live? What country does he live in?
Remember? India.
India.
Yep. Lives in India. That's wonderful.
India, that's kind of far away. Zachary, do you think it's important that kids like you do raise money and support other people like you're doing through Save One Life? Do you think it's important for kids like you to be involved in stuff like this?
Yes.
Why is that?
Well, why do you think it's important to raise money? Why do we raise money for our main families? Because not everybody has what we have. We're very fortunate in Maine and in America.
Yeah.
How does it make you feel to raise money for your friends?
Good.
Yeah.
Good, yeah. Makes you feel good?
Mm-hmm.
Good. Well, you know, Zachary, we only have a few weeks left in 2020, which has been a very interesting year. So is there anything in the remaining weeks of 2020 that you're excited for? We talked a little about the upcoming holiday party. What else is going on that you're looking forward to?
Seeing my friends and family.
Well, Zachary, I have to say again, it was so inspiring to read about your decision and your family's decision. I think there's a lot of other families and a lot of other kids who are hearing your story, and it might inspire them to donate or fundraise or otherwise do good that they hadn't been intending on doing. So because you were willing to not only do what you did, but share about it publicly, I just want to say thank you, because that's how other people get inspired. And that's how real change happens. When one person like you, Zachary, decides to make a decision and talk about it, it inspires others. And the domino effect of all of that is tremendous. So thank you for what you're doing, and please keep it up.
And thank you for supporting Save One Life. We love hearing your story. We'll catch up with you guys later.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, Zachary, for joining and for inspiring all of us. Thank you all out there for listening. And a reminder to follow Dr. Zadie, to follow any of the people we mentioned earlier, the Shematologist, and the hashtag #Ash20 for all the latest from the American Society of Hematology's annual meeting over the next few days. Amy and I will be back next week with another episode filled with entertainment and information. And with that, that is all for this episode. Special thanks to everyone at Bloodstream Media and Believe Limited who makes this Bloodstream podcast possible. Thanks to Zachary, and thanks as well to our presenting sponsor, Takeda. BleedingDisorders.com to learn more about their resources for and commitment to the blood disorders community. Subscribe to the Bloodstream podcast. We're on Apple, Spotify, SoundCloud. You know the deal. Subscribe everywhere. Leave us a rating in the Apple Store if you haven't already. 5 stars is all I want to talk about today. Share this episode with a friend, or share any episode of Bloodstream with any human being you know. We cover a lot of topics. You probably know at least one or two people. And word of mouth is the best way we reach those new people. So, word that mouth. Have a bleeding disorder or health topic that you'd like to hear Amy and I discuss and maybe butcher? Well, you want to inquire about casting opportunities for Bloodstream's narrative and docu-styled podcast series? Good news. You can email us mailbag@Amy.
Oh God, bloodstreammedia.com. Oh,
I didn't tell her I was going
to
do that.
I had to look for it in my notes.
Connect with Bloodstream Media on social media. You'll find us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. You can follow Bordeaux, me, or Natalie, who's here sometimes, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or LinkedIn. Shout out to all the committed LinkedIn users out there.
We love y'all. We love y'all.
Program notes for this episode in your podcast player or on bloodstreammedia.com. where you'll find links and information related to the stories and segments featured on this episode. I am your host, Patrick James Lynch.
And I am that other host, Amy Board.
That's true, and until next time, take self-care of yourself. Bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.